This is Jonathan Berendt, and I want to welcome the listeners, and most importantly, I want to welcome the participants in this discussion. And to begin, I'd like to talk about two words. The first one is courage, because anybody who is listening to this discussion, who can relate to social anxiety and blushing problems, certainly knows that it would take a lot of courage to talk about the problems, given that the problem is driven by emotions of embarrassment, shame, humiliation. The second word that I'd like to talk about is integrity. What I'm going to be communicating is with a lot of integrity, and the same for the participants in this discussion. And guys, I want you to know very clearly that if I say something that you disagree with, I want you to feel free to open that up in discussion. Now, in May of 2012, a college student, Brandon Thomas, committed suicide due to depression caused by his blushing, and there's a lot of information on the internet about this. Shortly after this tragedy, MSNBC quoted Dr. Enrique Jadrazic, I don't know if I pronounced that right, a Chilean psychiatrist whom they designated as the world's expert in blushing, as saying that, and I quote, "Pathological blushing is an uncontrollable reaction triggered by an overactive nervous system. It can wear down self-esteem and even the will to live." I certainly agree with the doctor that it can wear down self-esteem and the will to live, but I strongly disagree with his statement that it's an uncontrollable response. In fact, I believe that his general diagnostic and use of the word uncontrollable characterizes the medical community's and the mental health community's misunderstanding of social anxiety in general and erythrophobia, that's the fear of blushing, specifically. And hopefully, after this discussion, the listeners will understand that if someone is willing to do hard work, this is a controllable phenomenon. So I'd like to start with Roger, if you don't mind. Roger, you're at the beginning of treatment, and I know that in the first few sessions, I think you've developed a lot of insight, but where you're at right now, again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that with the blushing problem and its accompanying anxiety, you're pretty stuck. Is that accurate?
Yeah, right now I'm pretty to the point where I don't think I'm going to get to a point where I can function like I want to in society. So
could you elaborate with what's going on with your anxiety and the blushing specifically?
Well, right now, I have extreme anxiety right now. You can probably hear it in my voice, but the anxiety and the blushing kind of go hand in hand with each other. So if I tend to get anxious or nervous, I tend to blush.
How long have you been experiencing this?
Probably since I was about 21, I'd say the anxiety got to the point where the blushing started to come to the surface, and then it kind of snowballed from there.
How old are you now?
30.
And how does the blushing impact your life?
Well, it doesn't let me, you know, do the things I want to do. Despite that, I still have this blushing problem. I'm still semi-successful. So if I didn't have this blushing problem, I think I would, you know, be a lot more, I don't know, successful, I guess you could say.
Well, elaborate a little bit.
Well, there's things I want to do and achieve, and I'm not really able to do those things due to the blushing. So, you know, I kind of live around my blushing, so it's kind of hard to function in society when you have this problem. So,
and I imagine that the blushing controls or impacts your mood a lot. I wouldn't say that you're a happy camper because of this problem. Would you say that you are depressed?
Yeah, I go through times where I'm depressed. Then I have times where I just kind of ignore my problem. But I get in those moods. You know, I have good days and bad days. Most of the time, I'll try to just put it in the back of my mind that I have this issue, and I'll try to, you know, there's no problem. It's kind of a silly issue to me to have. And then other days, I'll be really focused on it, and it'll get to me if I miss a function because of it. it tends to eat at me, you know?
We've had a handful of treatment sessions so far, and two sessions ago, I believe I called you out, and I said, I think that you're 2 seconds away from telling me that you want to take a break from treatment. Because things were not going smoothly and easily. And at that point, you said to me, well, something like, I'm reading your mind, and now you know there's no magic for resolution to the problem. Is that fairly accurate?
That is. I originally thought when I contacted you there was going to be some kind of trick or something that, you know, was automatically going to, you know, make me stop blushing and get rid of this issue. Once I seen that it was going to take a lot of work and effort, I tended to kind of back off of treatment. It was almost just like, you know what the hell's the point, you know? I'm just going to be this way. I'm just going to have to live with this issue. You know, why am I going to continue on with therapy? And you nailed it when we spoke. You said, you know, you're about to back off of therapy, and that's exactly what I was thinking. And then, you know, after we spoke, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and keep on fighting and keep on trying, you know?
Okay, thank you for sharing. Now, what I want to do is I want to introduce the other people in this discussion, and I'm going to give a description of where I think you're at. If I say anything wrong, please correct me. And then I would like you to give a description of where you were when you started treatment, where you believe you're at now, and how you got there. So let's start with Tripp. The way I would describe Tripp is that he's a wonderful role model for the resolution of obsessive compulsive disorder without the use of medication and blushing specifically. I think that if Tripp started treatment, everything I like to grade on a scale of 1 to 10, if he started at a 1, 10 being perfect, which maybe isn't possible, I would say that Tripp is pretty much at a 9. Would you say that's true, Tripp?
Oh, yeah, I would agree with you.
Okay, so could you not only give Roger some feedback, but give the brief story of where you were at the beginning of treatment, where you're at now, and how you got there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, here's the thing, you know, it's Roger, you know, the first thing he said was, you know, you could probably hear anxiety in my voice, but the reality is that he presented his story in an awesome way, man. I mean, you sounded intelligent, and you did a great job, and, you know, people with anxiety, and including myself, you know, we have a tendency to beat ourselves up. And, you know, when in reality, you're way more intelligent than you give yourself credit for. And, you know, one of the biggest issues is that people don't believe in themselves, and you really have to believe in yourself and trust that you can overcome this. Although it takes real work, it's just like anything in life. I mean, Richard Branson, Bill Gates, those guys didn't get there without working. We all have to work on ourselves. But, you know, I thought that, again, Roger, you know, that was a good job in presenting. As far as my story in a nutshell is, you know, a very typical, just stereotypical blushing story. Around the age of 15, 16, it surfaced when I was dating. Externally, it was very difficult. You know, I was very open, fun, popular, whatever you want to call it, person. And, you know, when this blushing issue hit me, and I had to present in high school, get up in front of people, and do all the things that can give you adrenaline and make you nervous, that's when, you know, things really started to intensify with my blush. You know, 16, 17, 18, and it just snowballed, like Roger said. And, you know, it really turned into an OCD issue. I was obsessing daily about it. You know, a lot of internal confusion. What's going on? I was depressed. Why is this happening to me? I had no answers. Freaked out. And the So I got into college, and, you know, I was dealing with the issue, hiding it the best I could, avoiding everything that I could. And so then, like I said, long story short, I came across, like, you know, right when the internet, when I was in college, you know, Google was just now kind of coming around. So, yeah, I searched and found this place out in Texas that would cut your nerves to, you know, magically fix this issue. And the crazy thing is, and this is kind of where the psychological process comes into play with me, where, you know, I realized that there was help out there, I felt like I was already better. You know, and something told me when I went to the surgeon out there, I mean, I went as far as having a consultation. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have watched my video on the Kukis program, but I talk about some of this there. And anyway, when I was there, you know, I didn't go through with the procedure, and I realized that there had to be another way out, and that's when I got into the real work, and here I am today.
Okay, we're going to come back to some of the specifics of the real work soon. Let's go now to Sherry. Okay, now Sherry, the way I'm going to introduce Sherry is, Sherry represents, I mean, anybody who comes to therapy, and in order for it to be productive, has to do some real hard work, okay? It's not easy, and I'm going to be really upfront about that. But if you do hard work, it can be productive. Sherry represents, in terms of my work, you know, and I've been doing this since 1978 with about 10,000 people, Sherry has fixed her problem with blushing the fastest that I've ever seen. And I have a little bit of anxiety saying the number of sessions that had occurred, because then people who are listening to this are going to call and they're going to think that they can do it the same way. The reality is that everybody has their own learning curve. But Sherry, can you talk about where you were at, where you're at now, and whatever else comes to mind that's important?
Sure. I also want to first kind of reiterate what Tripp said to Roger is, you know, a lot of the times we think we sound nervous, we think we're blushing and sweating, and sometimes we really aren't. And that was actually one of the biggest kind of turning points for me, is to understand that even though, you know, I felt that I was nervous all the time and that everybody knew it a lot of the time, it just wasn't true. And Roger, listening to you, I would have never known that you, you know, had social anxiety aside from the content of what you were saying. It really sounded like you're very comfortable. So that was something that was very helpful to me to understand. So, you know, I just want to commend
you. Yeah, I get that
a
lot. A lot of people tell me that I come off too confident, and they get a little intimidated by that, and I'm kind of like, really? You know, because inside, I'm kind of, you know, I'm real nervous and tense, but, you know, I'm projecting something different than what I'm thinking I'm projecting.
Well, you need to start believing everybody else. That was a problem that I had as well. So my story, I guess, is a little bit different because I've had this my entire life. I remember being 6 or 7 and avoiding, you know, public speaking, little things that you had to do in first grade or second grade. I was blushing and nervous and sweating even at that age. So my whole family seems to kind of have it. I come from a very critical family. So I would always just think it's genetic. I can't really change it. This is just who I am. But then recently I had moved from the city to the suburbs. And I found myself just getting worse every day, just avoiding a lot of things at work, avoiding a lot of social situations where now I really needed to make new friends and be out there. I'm sort of alone in my house with my kids. So I really sort of hit a place where I would see all these other people that were so confident and comfortable, and they could talk for, you know, hours at a time about things, and I was, you know, it just started to hit me that it couldn't just be genetic, and it had to be something that I could work on or get a little bit better, because it wasn't kind of staying the same. I was getting a lot worse. So that's, you know, why I kind of did some Google searches and found Jonathan's program, and it really has helped me enormously. I know it's hard to believe that I I'm only 9 or 10 sessions in, but I've done a lot of really hard work and really given it my all. I've kind of put my blushing on blast. I've been talking to everybody about it. Everyone knows I'm kind of in therapy and I'm working on
it. Okay, wait, let me hold you there. You've been talking to everybody about it. That is unbelievably huge.
Yeah.
Just go with that a little bit. Talk about that.
Sure. So there's a lot of times when I'll be in a situation and I feel myself start to sweat and my heart is racing and you feel that my face starts to get really hot, and I'll sort of stop and turn to someone who's with me, my friend or my husband or my coworker, and ask them, am I blushing right now? And
wow.
A lot of the time they tell me I'm not. And in that moment, I've started to learn that I can sort of turn it around from happening by someone telling me I'm really not blushing, or I'll check a mirror and I'm really, it's coming out, and I'm sure my face would turn red the longer the moment continued, but by myself understanding that I'm not blushing in that moment, I can kind of turn it off a little bit. And my mind becomes really clear. Go ahead.
Can I make a point here, Jonathan?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, one of the things I think I hear Sherry talking about is that, you know, accepting bodily sensations, you know, and accepting that, you know, one of the things that I've dealt with is, you know, when you shave or, you know, I have sensitive skin, regardless of the blush, that, you know, anytime when you become obsessed with this blush thing, you obsess over facial sensations, whether it's sunburn or after you shave, or and you really, one of the techniques or things that I've done is, you know, feeling after you shower. That's another example, is just accepting those sensations. Doesn't mean you're blushing just because you feel something, but just accepting your sensations in your body.
Thank you. Okay, listen, we're going to go to Jenny now, and then it's going to be halftime, and then I'm going to bust your chops. Because, listen, I say this with integrity. Let's go back to this concept for a minute. I have not, in my research, ever come across a group discussion with blushers, because the people who suffer from this are so driven by embarrassment, humiliation, shame, as is the case with social anxiety in general. I really want to be able to help the listeners. So I'm going to be coming back after Jenny speaks. I'm going to be coming back, and I'm going to be going over specific concepts, and I want you guys to respond to that. Okay, so Jenny, the way that I would characterize your profile is that you came into therapy with a lot of emotional pain, and you've been working very diligently and very hard and doing the 1 to 10 thing. I might be a little off here, so you're going to have to give me feedback. I would say that if you started at a 1, you are currently at a 6.86. Something like that.
I like that. I would say a 7, so I like that. I think that's good.
Okay, so why don't you share your story?
Well, my story starts way back, probably when I was in the 6th grade, and I remember being scared to death that I was going to be called on to read out loud in class, and I would do everything to make sure that that didn't happen. I would fake I was sick. I would leave the room. I would say I had to go to the bathroom or get a drink. And I felt like everyone was laughing at me. And that really started this speaking performance anxiety that I had and I still have in some ways. When I was in the 6th grade, that's really when it started. And then over time, I took Toastmasters, and I felt like I got better at public speaking. But what happened was, for me then, I knew I had this blushing happening when I was in stressful or difficult situations, and I didn't like it. And a lot of times it happened when I would be caught off guard, or working professionally, it would be when someone unexpected would show up at my office door, or if I was called on in at a meeting to answer a question in front of a group of people. I was worried about the blush, that they would notice the blush. I was worried what I sounded like. Was I saying something stupid? And then that really grew into this social phobia. I did not want to be in those situations. And I also, what happened was, I would be out shopping, grocery shopping, at the store, and I was scared to death that I was going to run into somebody that I knew, and that would bring on this intense blush, shaking panic attack. And I knew that I was starting a pattern of avoiding those situations. And I knew it wasn't right, and probably when it was at the worst, what I can tell you is I walked into a store once, and I would always scan the parking lot, number one, to see if I knew, recognized anyone's cars. And then I would go in, and one time my mom and my own brother were in the store, and I avoided them. And, you know, it's those moments where you know, oh my gosh, I have a serious problem. And finally, I got very anxious just about a year and a half ago. I quit my work. I was in a bad environment at work. And I just knew that I was going to be 40 years old, and I wanted to change my life, and I wanted something better. And I wanted something better for my family, my kids. And that's when I went online and I found Jonathan, and I've been working with him now for about a year and a half. And what I would say to Roger probably today is that you are in the right place, and good for you. Good for you for saying, you know what, I want to fix this, and I want to make it better for myself. And as Jonathan said, that takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage, so I commend you for that.
Okay, thank you. Roger, do you want to ask any of these guys any questions?
Yeah, I do. Actually, have a question for Tripp, being that he's a man too. You know, I am married. I do have children, and my wife doesn't know about you know, my issue. She thinks I'm actually better than with talking to people than she is, so she pushes me out front a lot. But coming out to your wife as a man, how did that affect you? And is your wife supportive of your condition? Does she look down on it? Things of that nature.
Oh, well, if she wasn't, man, I'd kick her to the curb. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm kidding. She, absolutely, you know, that's one of those things I think we kind of tell ourselves sometimes. I went through some of that in the beginning when I was, you know, still real freaked out about this blushing problem. But, oh, man, I'm as open as I can be about it with my wife. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear this, but the more open you are about it, just the more free you feel. And, you know, anytime I want to talk about it, I mean, I'll talk about it with her, you know, whether whatever it is that gives me anxiety, whether it's, you know, blushing or work stuff or you name it. But the more you can communicate, you know, you don't have to just dump all this stuff on her at once. You can ease yourself into it. But my recommendation would be to just have a conversation. And then, you know, I just really think you would benefit from that.
Right. But what Roger, what you're saying, I think, is that the hypervigilance in your case, that's a key word, you know, in treatment. The radar is working overtime. It's profound in terms of your concern about how your wife is going to respond, right?
That's correct, yeah. You know, you run through all those fears of, you know, what if she thinks I'm weak? You know, is she going to think less of me? Things of that nature.
Look, you're not weak, and this is the way that I like to present it, is that, I mean, I have high cholesterol. I mean, I'm very in shape, run a lot, but I just have high cholesterol. I mean, it's in my blood. And, you know, I guess the same applies to, you know, I'm a blusher.
Yeah, but listen, Tripp, okay, no, wait, hold on here, because now we're getting into some core things. Okay, so the typical person who blushes, who has a problem, there are some people who blush who don't care. But when we're talking about erythrophobia, social anxiety-driven blushing, when the person blushes, their internal critical script, that is an important dynamic, that's a mind state. The critical script works over time and says, I'm not okay as a human being. People are going to see who I really am. They're going to see I'm a fraud. They can tell I'm nervous. Am I right, guys, or wrong?
You're absolutely right. This is Jenny talking. You're absolutely right, and I think that's probably, for me, the biggest reason why I'm at a 7 and not at a 9.5 or 10 is because you have to get in this place where you accept it, and you have to get in a place where, quite frankly, you don't care what your wife thinks. You know, I needed to get in a place where I didn't care what my husband thinks and other people that I said, you know, I'm talking, working with Jonathan, working on this. You have to get in that place where it doesn't matter anymore what people think. What matters is you
think. Yeah, that's a really good point. It's a really good point.
And just for the record, too, on the whole spouse thing, because I did the same thing, and I'm amazed at how my husband actually thinks I'm so strong. Having dealt with this for so long and finally stepping out and saying, you know what, I want to make this right. So just keep that in mind, too.
Okay, now we're lucky here because most of the people on this call, the women included, are understand football and they're into football. Okay, so
yes.
Nebraska, Cornhusker territory. Absolutely.
I'm not a Husker fan. My brother's a football coach and my dad is a football coach.
Okay, so. Let's talk football for a second. The metaphor that I use is when a person has social anxiety, or any anxiety disorder for that matter, they are playing defense. You cannot beat an anxiety. You cannot resolve, cure, or whatever, an anxiety disorder by playing defense. This is what a lot of people don't want to hear. So we use the metaphor of the quarterback. My team being the Patriots, I got a pretty good quarterback. Now, Tom Brady may throw an interception, but he takes responsibility for creating motion. Okay, so I want you guys to talk a little bit, starting with Sherry, if you don't mind. How did you go from defense to offense? And you're a football fan, so you should be comfortable with this.
Well, one of the biggest things for me was really kind of putting myself in the game. So I was a big avoider. So I really needed to, and avoiding gives you that sort of instant gratification. The nervousness sort of goes away. You don't have to deal with it. So I was sort of constantly putting myself in situations that I couldn't get out of and, you know, forcing myself to sort of face it. So, you know, unscripting myself. A lot of the times I would kind of handicap myself by writing things down, this is what I'm going to say, I'm going to get in and out, it's going to be very quick. And so I was really starting to kind of trust myself, give myself sort of the nurturing parent, increasing my self-esteem. I was giving myself these pep talks, really trying to make myself feel better about myself and believing what other people were saying about me and you know, really trying to get more comfortable with my blushing, accepting the blushing.
Okay, Jenny, can you give an example of when you were playing defense and you caught yourself and you were aware of the moment, obviously, either in present tense or after the fact, and how you connected, we're getting a little deeper here, but how you connected frustration or anger to that dynamic?
Yes, so for me, if I avoided a situation, and I would get depressed. I would leave that situation and feel like I completely failed because I avoided the situation and I allowed this blushing and anxiety to take control. So in working through this, what I realized in order to quarterback it is, if I'm out and about at a store, for example, and I see someone from afar that I know, rather than avoiding that person, I'm going to go right in for the kill. You know, I'm going to go right in and engage in conversation in the middle of the store with that person so that I am forced to be in an uncomfortable situation. And now what I do is whenever my brain starts to go, oh, no, 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 you can't do that. That scares you. That is my trigger. I have to do it. I have to do that.
You know, you guys all sound so eloquent and confident here. Let's go back to the Brandon Thomas story. Here is a young man who killed himself because of the depression related to blushing and anxiety, and Tripp mentioned before the Andrew Kukis Foundation DVD training film for professionals and the lay community, and that was inspired by Andrew, who also committed suicide, driven by his perfectionism, obsessiveness, and the family rose to the occasion by creating this training tool. But anyway, on a scale of 1 to 10, if these individuals had an 11, you get what I'm saying, emotional pain, when you guys came into treatment, Tripp and Jenny, I think, you know, your numbers were up in the 7, 8, 9 category. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay, what about you, Sherry? What about you?
I would say mine was probably at a 7 or an 8.
Okay, so can you... I'm concerned that the audience, whoever's going to listen to this, is going to think, you know, it's just too easy. You know, where'd your pain go? How'd you deal with it? Anybody?
Well, for myself, this is Jenny. I've been working on this for, what, a year and a half? I mean, it's not an easy process. And when I came in, I was low. My emotions were right there. I was in tears a lot. I was thinking, I'm never going to get this right. My life, I'm never going to be as successful as I want to be. I'm not going to do the things I want to do. You do have those fleeting thoughts of, well, I could just end it all. And some way, somehow, you find this sense of, I'm going to fight this and work through it and hope for the best. I mean, I don't know. It's tough. It's not easy. It's difficult.
Yeah. Trip, there are a lot of people who have this problem who have considered the sympathectomy. What was that's the procedure where the physician cuts the invasive procedure where nerves are cut. What was going on for you when you went to that office?
Well, you know, when I went to that office, I really didn't. I didn't want to go through with the procedure, and there was just a lot of confusion, you know, still. I didn't know what was going on, but I realized that there was some way out of this deal, and I knew that when I went there, having the surgery wasn't the right outlet. And, you know, a couple of years later, a year and a half later, is when I came to you, and, like I said, started doing, you know, the real work. And the thing that I did with myself was that, you know, I realized that I was in this thing for the long run, and I bought books to educate myself on OCD, which was a big role, played a big role in my blushing and just with all of my anxiety stuff, and I really just made it a study to overcome this thing, and started throwing myself in situations like Jenny was talking about, just in a proactive way, started taking this thing head
on. But Tripp, listen, you know, there are a lot of people who are listening, and they're going to be saying, well, easy for this guy to say, how can he do it? Because I'm so stuck. When you were considering that the sympathectomy, what was going on with you emotionally? You had to be pretty, you would have had to be pretty desperate at that point.
Oh, yeah, man. I wanted the quick fix. I needed a way out. I couldn't take it anymore. You know, I couldn't take the avoiding anymore. I couldn't take the blushing anymore. I mean, it just, I wanted to snap my fingers and make these negative emotions go away. And I wanted to just, I felt like having this, my nerves cut, that it was just totally going to wipe away all the depression and everything else that came along with the blushing.
And I would say the word desperate is a good description of how one feels. I mean, that's how I felt. I felt so desperate, lost, alone, like nobody gets it. Nobody understands how this feels.
The average person who is suffering from this, whether they've had the problem for 25 years or for 5 months, and they're contemplating turning it around, the average person has terribly unrealistic expectations regarding treatment. Most people do not want to do hard work. They want a pill. They want, as Roger shared before, something magic. Can you explain, you know, why doing hard work, and then I want to get into some specifics, but can you explain why doing hard work is worth it? Remember, you're talking to people, it's you way back when, and most people do not want to do hard work.
Well,
a lot of people say, it's all in your head. And my response to that is, it absolutely is, but what is in your head? What is in your head is your brain, and a lot of people want to treat that as an abstract, generalized phenomenon.
Well, I mean, my personal opinion is that it's a society problem. I think that we all want, in today's world, a quick fix, I mean, to everything, whether it's something financially or, you know, we want a pill to fix, you know, whatever it is going on with us physically. I think that people, it almost seems like human nature, they don't want to work to get to the top. And hard work, in my opinion, if you want to go somewhere, applies to everything. I mean, yeah, you can win the lottery, but, you know, what are the odds of that? And, you know, I just, you have to have that type of approach to anxiety and blushing.
All right, so let me go over some of the dynamics of treatment, and then you guys can comment. First of all, everybody wants to know when they're contemplating treatment, what technique do you use? Okay, now I explain. I try to be as upfront as possible. There's two levels of treatment. There's technique and there's core work, and one without the other is not going to be productive. Okay, but in terms of technique, it's the paradox, which means opposite, of adrenaline acceptance. It's the adrenaline that drives the blushing. Can you guys, let's go. Sherry, can you comment on that? How you integrated that into your self-help?
Sure. I mean, I needed to know that the adrenaline was something that I could sort of ride, like your analogy with the surfing and riding the wave, that if I wasn't focused on it, I could use it in a really positive way and kind of get on this sort of high and really enjoy presenting or enjoy telling a story to a group of people or, you know, not mind being put on the spot. I had to recognize that it wasn't bad, that I could use it in a positive way.
What about you other guys?
Adrenaline-wise, when I first heard you say it's adrenaline advantage, really, so what I had to do was rethink the adrenaline. So I always thought that feeling was bad. So what I have had to work on is that feeling is good and use it to my advantage. You know, before this phone call today, my adrenaline was going. So now what I try and do is tell myself that's a good thing. That's great.
But it's hard to get there. Right?
It's really hard to get there because, you know, especially, you know, you've spent most of your life telling yourself that's bad and trying to fight it. And for me, I have come to accept the fact that this is something I'm probably going to be working on the rest of my life.
But I don't want to scare people in terms of treatment. And when you say you've been working for a year and a half, I don't have your folder in front of me, but I think it's been 30-something sessions and you're well on your way to, you know, healing, and people just, you know, their people's critical scripts run amok. Their expectations can be really, really wild. Anyway, so mind states in general, one is the critical script. We talked about that briefly, how that's the cause of the problem. That's where the toxicity is. People will see who I really am. Well, you know, that leads to the core issue. It's a self-esteem issue. Mm-hmm. And it goes very, very deep. And when people believe that I'm not okay as a human being because I blush, they're not being logical. That's the adult mind state. The reality is, I blush, I have hyperhidrosis. the reason that people tend to go too deeply into, oh, people can see who I am, is because of traumas historically that have created the hypervigilance and caused the critical script to be, the internal critical script to be so excessive. Anybody want to talk about that?
Sure, I would. This is Cheryl talking. One of the biggest problems that I had to deal with was my critical family, kind of contributing to my critical script. I could almost hear my mom or my grandmother kind of saying things in my head to me, and it was just a lot of years of sort of build-up, and I had a lot of instances of or times that I can remember where I would get critiqued for something and it would cause me to then avoid the same kind of situation. So I had to do a lot of, I know I did it in a short period of time, but I had to do a lot of work with my family, all of us sort of coming to terms and being less critical and less judgmental of each other. So now I can sort of be in a safer place with my family, where my critical script has really been depleted a lot. The words that I hear now, I don't hear them as much anymore.
All right, let's take this a step further. Thank you for sharing that. When the internal critical script puts unrealistic messages on the inner child, that's another mind state. This is a strategy that we use in therapy, is the mind state. It's based on transactional analysis. And the natural child is spontaneous, explorative. It's the truth of desire, happiness, joy. When the critical script inhibits the development of the natural child mind state, the result is, and I think this is the most powerful dynamic in treatment, and I have to credit Dr. John Sarno and his work on back pain and his books for this. It's been probably the most important thing I've learned over the last decade of my career. But when the natural child is inhibited, the result at different levels of consciousness, we have conscious, mid-conscious, and unconscious, is anger and rage that recycles, and that drives the obsessive worry, the anxiety, not to mention the blushing itself. Anybody feel like commenting on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware that I was angry until I started working on my issue. And yet, now that I'm so aware that even today I can see that deep, deep anger on a subconscious level, whether it's coming from work or something from my parents or wherever it's coming from, it's a driving force for obsessiveness and this anxiety. And it was just very important for me to meditate and dig deep within myself and try to pull out these deep angers that were driving some of my obsessiveness.
Roger, do you have any questions for anybody at this point?
Yeah, I got a couple questions, actually. They might sound kind of silly, but does anybody else have a hard time getting their hair cut? Because that's, like, excruciating for me.
looking at yourself in the mirror?
Yeah, you have to stare at yourself in the mirror, and you just have to sit there, and, you know, no matter what, you're going to blush. Well, I usually do. I get a lot of an adrenaline before I go to those kind of situations. I'm trying to learn to curb that adrenaline, you know, as I'm approaching that situation, but just wondering if you guys have any thoughts or any tips to maybe...
I used to go through a little bit of that when I would get my hair cut and have some adrenaline, but, you know, the thing that I do now, which I really, honestly, I just go in and get my hair cut, I don't even think about it anymore, but go in there and, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and try to make yourself blush. I mean, tell yourself, let's blush while we're getting our hair cut, or...
get it over with.
Yeah, let's just blush and bring it out there, and, you know, or even play with your hairstylist or barber or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, joke around. I mean, that's kind of what we're, you know, that's kind of the deal. You're bringing it out to the surface and having fun with it the best that you can.
Yeah, that's a tough concept for people, though, Trip, having fun. I think it would be more productive, and that takes a lot of self-esteem, which you have. okay, and it's to your credit. But what you're really talking about is playing quarterback versus defense. You know, one of the very first patients I had in 1976, 77, before I even knew what social anxiety was, told me a story. I was doing biofeedback and psychotherapy then. Roger, you're reminding me. This guy used to go for haircuts, and it was he had a lot of anxiety, and he had to have a little flask of vodka, you know, with him before he went into the haircut place. So it's more common than
that's
you think.
Funny.
Okay, Roger, what else? I want you to keep going. Anything else you want to ask these guys?
See. Well, you know, right now I'm in the beginning stages of therapy. I'm starting to understand a lot of the anger issues that are maybe a subconscious level, and I concur with that too. I think that is where a lot of this blushing comes up. So I guess how do you guys cope with that underlying anger?
I tell you what I do. I'm gonna quit talking because I'm just hogging the conversation over here. But I journal and write about it. I exercise, I run, and try to sweat.
That's the key thing for me too, is staying physically fit as well. And I'm very active. And I had considered the nerve where they cut the nerve. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know, is it even going to help? And if it does, it's going to leave me in a state where, you know, I'm not going to be able to be as active as I want to be. So that was one thing that I did consider as well. So, and I think we've all been there, you know.
I know one of the things I'm working on, which keeps me at that seven, is being able to express my anger and not holding it in.
That's hard for me as well, and I think it's probably hard for us since we are blushers and we have a lot of anxiety.
It is.
A lot
it's
of the things
really
we
hard.
Want to say and we want to do, we kind of hold back, you know, and I think we have a lot to say because I think, you know, being a blusher, you know, having a lot of anxiety, I think we are really intelligent people, and that's part of the reason why we might have this issue.
Before I ask the final question, does anybody have a question for anybody else here? No. You have anxiety. Okay. So here's the final question. All right. So we first of all, you know, I thank you guys so much for participating, and we've touched on a lot of issues. You know, we've seen, you know, dramatic success. You know, we've heard from people who've had dramatic success. My goal here was to have people at different stages of the healing process. The final question is, for each of you, other than Roger, can you describe the benefits of being in the process or having healed? It's kind of like a before and after question, not the 1 to 10 version, but, you know, how does it break down in terms of the impact on your life behaviorally, emotionally? Sherry, can you go first?
Sure. It's been a pretty dramatic improvement for me. I've been avoiding things for so long and changed my career path and done so many things to feed the blushing, and which has just kept it going. That now that I've sort of come to terms with it and found ways to manage it and be okay with it, just succeeding so much more in work. I'm taking on more responsibilities. I'm leading more meetings. I'm taking on presentations. I'm much more social in my day-to-day interactions. I find my life to be so much more enjoyable, and I'm just very grateful for this program.
Jenny?
For me, I would say I was really, when I started just not feeling good about myself, I just did not have a whole lot of hope that I was going to be able to fix this. I felt like I was a failure because all this was happening to me, the blushing and anxiety. And now when I venture out and I have the courage to step out and put myself in situations that scare me, and I do it successfully, maybe even with blush, maybe not. There's just a great sense of I'm proud of myself, and that in turn helps my self-esteem grow, and I'm just in a happier place, with more hope for getting better.
You're talking about increasing the nurturing mind state, self-acknowledgement. People who come to the clinical table with the blushing problem, the people that I work with, many tend to be successful and intelligent and come from good families, but there has been a nurturing deficit. That's another mind state. And one of the important processes of treatment is to compensate for that and to teach self-nurturing. Trip, you want to comment?
Yeah, you know, I'm so thankful in a very bizarre way that I have this problem, that I had the blushing problem from the beginning, because it led me to a lot of opportunity. I mean, it led me to educate myself about anxiety that empowered me, and it really elevated my intelligence. It's made me learn skills, public speaking skills. It's driven me to do those kind of things, and to really, I think it ignited my study towards success and learning about self-awareness and learning about the things that make us grow in life. And, you know, I just know that I'm at a place now where, you know, it's like Tony Robbins says, ask yourself what is great about a problem every time you come across a problem. And, I mean, I ask myself that, what is great about my blushing problem? And that is that it made me unique, and that, you know, it helped me learn and grow.
Guys, I want to thank you very much for participating. I know this was not easy. I do believe that those individuals who listen to this discussion will be helped. Thank you very much.
I want to clarify the use of the 1 to 10 statistic used during this discussion. 10 is the best. 1 is the worst. What we were measuring was an integration of the following. Number 1, the degree to which the symptom of blushing was under control in terms of quantity and intensity. Number 2, improvement regarding the avoidance of challenging scenarios. And number 3, the degree of emotional well-being and improvement in overall mood and self-esteem. For further information on blushing, social anxiety, and related issues, please go to social anxiety.com.